Joe collects the maps, pictures, and diagrams and puts them in a manila envelope, which he hands to Jim and says, "Okay, let's look at the detonator." Ed picks up the small bag he brought in with him, reaches in, and pulls out the black rubber-coated detonator. "This is neat, ain't it? Just one phone call and poof, no more problems. Jack can just dial his worries away." Joe picks it up, looks it over carefully, and says, "It's going to cost us a lot of kids to die. I hope it's worth it." Jim says, "Hey, this is the fun part. We don't get to do too many really big jobs. This will put us in the record books, right ahead of the Oklahoma City job a few years ago. That job only killed 168. We could beat that record." Ed laughs. "Sure will, dude. I guess we're done here for the day. The kegs will be here tomorrow afternoon. Come by around 3 and look them over. You might want to scout out the clubs and the streets around it, too," says Joe. They get up. Ed puts the detonator back in the bag and zips it shut. They grab their coats and follow Joe, Mark, and Sid out onto the warehouse garage floor. Joe points out the door at one end through which they'll bring the beer truck and tells them where to park it. Chapter 11, January 18. Time, 3 p.m. Around 3 p.m. on Thursday, Joe, Mark, Sid, Ed, and Jim converge in pairs on Joe's warehouse. Joe looks forward to when Ed and Jim will be out of Omaha. The sooner the better. Once they've all arrived and taken their coats off, he says, "Okay, let's go take a look at the kegs." He gets up and walks down the hall. The others follow. "We hid the kegs in one of the storage rooms. Mark, Sid, and I moved them here ourselves when they arrived an hour ago." Joe takes out his keys, opens the door, and flips on the light. "So far as I can see, the kegs look completely normal, except if you look closely for the small red dot on the top of each. See?" Jim says, "Yep, I see them. You're right. They sure do look like regular beer kegs." They leave the storage room, and Joe flicks out the light, then locks the door. They walk to the main receiving area of the warehouse. Joe says, "Call us if you have any questions. Here's my number," handing Ed a slip of paper. "When you get back here with the beer truck, just pull in the west entrance. You can see it down there. Park it and then get the hell out of Dodge. We can take it from here." Chapter 12, Friday, January 19. Time, 11 a.m. Around 11 Friday morning, Mark and Sid arrive at Joe's and park their car across the street. They jog over to the warehouse. Mark pulls out a set of keys and unlocks the door. Normally it would be open, but today Joe's given everyone the day off, so it's locked. Joe does not want any witnesses, even his own guys. Once inside, they walk through the garage area towards Joe's office, their footsteps echoing in the cavernous, empty central open space. Before them, they see a large, white, windowless commercial van parked in the main garage area, with a large sliding door on one side and a pair of doors at the back. The roof is translucent, permitting light but obscuring the contents. "That looks like our ride," says Sid. "Yep, kind of looks that way," says Mark. They leave the garage area and walk down the wood-floored corridor to Joe's office. Joe is there waiting for them, reading the paper, smoking a cigarette and drinking coffee. "Hey, guys, I thought I heard you come in. Did you see the van?" "You bet. Looks good," says Mark. "So let's get the goods loaded and then we can get some lunch," says Joe. Mark and Sid take off their coats and Joe leads them to the storage room where the kegs are. He unlocks the door and Mark and Sid carefully put the first of the bombs on a two-wheeler and push it slowly to the van. Sid opens the back doors as Mark steadies the two-wheeler. Inside the van are some heavy padded quilts like moving companies use, along with some heavy woven fabric straps with buckles and a tarp. Sid says, "When I get back here with the driver, where do you want the van?" "Park it inside, but be sure to leave room for the beer truck." "Okay, will do." "So, what do you think's going to happen tonight?" asks Mark. Joan leans back and says, "At about 10 o'clock, Jack says he'll make the call. He wants to wait until the place is the most crowded so the death toll will be impressive. Then he wants to pull the trigger." "Geez, at 10 p.m.? There might be 300 or more people in there. That building's going to come down on them, isn't it?" asks Sid. "Yep, that's enough RDX to take down 3 buildings that size. So, where are you going to be when the ball drops?" "Gee, I don't know. I guess we should find some place with a good view." "What do you think it'll look like?" asks Sid. "Like Baghdad. Mushroom cloud, the works. The flames will be huge, I'm told." "Then I guess we won't watch from across the street. How about you?" "Jack wants a blow-by-blow description, so I'll be back at the warehouse and watch from the old office on the top floor. I should be able to see the whole show perfectly." "Yeah, I'll bet that'll be the best view in town," says Sid. "That's for sure," agrees Mark. "You two want to watch?" "Yeah, sure do," says Mark as Sid nods in agreement. "Okay, be here at about 9:30. It's a little afternoon and time to get started." Mark and Sid get in the van. Time, 1 p.m. At about 1 p.m. Friday afternoon, a long, low-slung beer delivery truck squeaks to a halt in a narrow, deserted alley behind a small bar a few blocks from Mulroan. The old anonymous brick buildings on either side of the alley are largely windowless except for a few frosted glass metal-framed openings high above street level. Various conduits and pipes creep up the sides and electrical wires connect to a motley assortment of poles running down one side of the alley. Soot-covered snow is pushed in random piles up against the walls on both sides. The main streets are 100 yards or more away in both directions. The driver jumps out. He's in his late 30s, balding, somewhat heavyset, wearing a thick parka with a fur-rimmed hood, worn jeans, and heavy, laced, high-top, rubber-soled boots. As he begins to unstrap a keg from its mooring, Tom backs the van up the alley to within about 20 feet of the rear of the beer truck. The driver notices the van but thinks nothing of it, probably just another delivery. The driver wrestles two kegs onto the two-wheeler, one on top of the other, then realizes he's forgotten the invoice sheets that he needs to have signed. He goes back to the cab and picks up the clipboard of papers from the seat. Returning to the two-wheeler, he places the clipboard on the top keg and shoves the heavy two-wheeler with the kegs up the ramp and in the bar. "He's right on schedule," says Sean, while he, Tom, and Bob wait quietly in the van, watching through the large side mirrors. A few minutes later, the driver returns and reattaches the two-wheeler to its door mounting, then climbs back into the rear of the truck to secure the loose straps. "I don't see anyone around. Let's go," says Bob. Tom and Bob pull on ski masks and hoods and hop out. Tom darts for the beer truck only a few feet away while Bob opens the sliding right door of the van. Tom jumps into the back of the truck and pulls out a gun with a silencer. The startled driver turns quickly. He sees Tom's gun and freezes, holding his hands up slightly, the strap he's holding dropping to the floor, its buckle making a metallic clang. "Hey, what's this?" "Oh, no, man. I don't want no trouble. There's no money on this truck," says the frightened driver. "Don't lose your head and you won't get hurt. You see that van with my friend? You're going over there and you're getting in. We want your truck, that's all. You got that?" says Tom. The frightened driver edges nervously past Tom. Tom follows closely behind them as they move towards the open van door. Bob, a few feet away, points to the open door. The terrified driver gets in while Tom continues to hold the gun on him. Bob hops in behind the driver and binds his hands and feet with nylon cable ties, then puts duct tape over his mouth. He pulls a stocking cap down over the driver's eyes and runs duct tape around it to blindfold him. As Bob detaches the keychain from the driver's belt, he leans over and says to the driver, "Just lay still, man. This is all about your truck. You'll be okay, I guarantee it. You understand?" The driver nods and assumes a fetal position on the cold metal floor of the van. The side door slides shut with a metallic thud. Bob gets in the passenger side of the van as Tom swaps places with Sean in the driver's seat and tosses him the truck keys. The van drives off while Sean jogs back to the beer truck, shuts the rear doors, and locks them with the large padlock. He gets in the driver's seat, puts it in gear, and the cab wobbles a bit left and right, and slowly the truck drives off. Sean drives the beer truck to Mac's Grill. At the club, Lance walks over to Todd and says, "Tom and Bob are at the warehouse and Sean's in the truck. He should be at Mac's pretty soon." "Yep, I'm listening in on his mic. I'll put it on the speaker." Sean drives the beer truck down a nondescript alley and cuts the motor. The truck shudders to a halt just forward of the rear entrance to a small bar. Sean picks up the clipboard and goes in the bar and then reemerges a few minutes later. He sees the white van back in about 30 feet behind him. He opens the rear doors of the truck, pulls out the dolly, then unfastens a keg. He rolls the keg to the end of the truck, then hefts it onto the dolly and pushes it up the ramp and into the bar. At the club, they listen as Sean speaks softly. "I just came out of the bar. There's a white van about 30 feet away. I'm putting the empty keg on board now. I expect they'll make their move any time now." Mark and Sid have pulled on their ski masks and are waiting. They watch Sean come out, toss the empty keg into the rear deck of the truck, climb in and start stowing the keg. Mark jumps into the back of the truck, gun drawn, and says, "Okay, drop it." Sid backs the van up close to the rear door of the beer truck. Sean says, "Hey, what's this? Keep your mouth shut and go get in that van." Sid has come around the side of the van and opened the side door. Sean jumps down off the truck and walks towards Sid. Sid says, "Turn around and put your hands behind your back." As he does, Sid quickly cuffs his hands with some nylon cable ties, then he slaps a piece of duct tape across Sean's mouth. Mark says, "Okay, in the van and lie on the floor." Then he ties Sean's feet with cable ties as well. Mark grabs the beer truck keys, then slides the door shut. Mark and Sid open the rear doors, pull off the tarp, and carefully transfer the three RDX kegs, one by one, from the van to the beer truck. When done, Mark shuts the beer truck doors and locks them with the large padlock, while Sid closes up the rear of the van. They spot Ed and Jim walking quickly down the alley towards them. Ed says, "Everything go okay?" "Fine. Piece of cake. Here are the keys. This one's for the rear door padlock. The kegs are near the door so they can be offloaded first. Here's the clipboard of invoices you'll need to get signed at Morone. The driver's in the van. Where's your car?" "It's back on the street up there." "Here's the keys," says Jim as he hands them to Mark. "Good. I'll have it in the parking lot across from Joe's warehouse waiting for you." "Good luck," says Sid as he heads back for the van. Ed and Jim get in the cab of the beer truck as Mark jogs up the alley to Ed and Jim's car. Behind him, he hears the beer truck's diesel engine grind as the truck lurches forward. He steps aside as they pass him and turn onto the main street beyond. Mark finds their car and drives it off to the warehouse. Sid gets in the van and drives to Joe's garage. Once inside, he parks the van off to one side. He slides open the van door and checks the bindings on Sean, then slams the door shut and heads for Joe's office. Joe says, "Everything go okay?" "Yep, no problem." Time, 2 p.m. At the club, they wait for Ed and Jim to arrive with the RDX kegs.